Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. We'll be discussing birds today on the program. Rich Guthrie, our great friend, is here to help answer your questions about birds. Rich is a former NCON specialist and compiler of the Catskill New York Christmas Bird Count for the National Audubon Society. Lots of calls always when Rich is here, so get in the queue early. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Appropriately enough, you may tweet us your questions and comments on birds at WAMC Vox Pop. That's one word, WAMC VOXPOP. You can also comment via Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Rich, welcome back to the show. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Ray. Glad to be here.
Birds, yes. Yes. They're heading south, are they?
They are, for the most part. Some of them are a little laggards. They'll wait a while. And many of them are long gone.
Yeah.
So, and we're always interested in see who's coming and going.
And of course, there are many that stick it out the whole winter, right?
Yeah. Well, at least they give the appearance as a group that they do.
What do you mean?
Well, the blue jays, for example. We see blue jays spring, summer, winter, fall. They're here. Except, if you look up this time of year, most magnificent thing, and it's one of my favorite goings-ons that's out there, and that is these loose groups of blue jays beat-footing it out of town.
Really?
They're flying over. They do it. They fly during the daylight hours. They fly at treetop level.
Yeah.
And they just kind of come through as little clubs, little groups.
Yeah.
Little league teams of bluebirds going by.
So some leave.
Yes.
And some stay. What are they? The short straw has to stay up here for the winter?
I don't know how they elect the stay behinds, but it's more likely the ones way further north that know better than to stick around, let's say, the Adirondacks or Canada for the winter.
Mm.
The ones around here say, no big deal. We could cope.
Mm, right.
The interesting thing, though, is that the ones up north leapfrog right over the ones down here. And they are the ones that end up down in North Carolina and Florida for the winter.
So the ones north do the vacationing down south.
Yeah, they got it right. They got the summer up north, and they got the winter down south.
I'll be darned. The phone number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. By the way, this is our last Vox Pop before the big fun drive, which kicks off on Monday morning at 6 o'clock. So if you have a hankering to call in Vox Pop, best do so today.
I'm all a Twitter.
Oh, that's very good. Let's go to Bill in East Nassau. Bill, you're on.
Yes, Ray, Rich,
how are
you?
Hi. Yes, sir.
I have a question for you. In the spring and summer, I have grackles that come and visit my bird feeder. And that's bad enough, but they also bring their friends, the cowbirds and the blackbirds.
Yes.
And the thing is that they go through so much feed. I can't keep the feeder full. So my question is, what can I be putting in the feeder, if anything, or should I just give up?
Well, there are a couple of things. The grackle is a member of the blackbird family. They're a very large blackbird. And being that, they are not likely to settle to come to the smaller size bird feeders.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could put something out there that is more of a dispenser, let's say, rather than a mass trough, then the little guys like the chickadees and titmice and nuthatches will apt to feast on those and be off limits for the bigger birds.
Right.
And the other thing is other food. You know, the thistle seed goes a long, long way. It's a little pricey, but the deal is it's favored only mainly by the goldfinches and their friends.
Okay.
And that will stretch your budget a long way.
Hmm. Okay. Well, the other thing you were mentioning, the blue jays, they visit the feeder too, and the perch is not big enough usually for many of them to sit on. But what they'll do is one will sit on the perch and throw the seed onto the ground while the others wait below.
Wow.
For the seed to come down. Yeah.
Yeah. You would think they're cooperating, but they're really not.
They're not.
The one on the feeder just doesn't get it, and the ones down below, they got it.
Right. Well, I tried to close the opening for the trough up a little bit so that only smaller birds could get there, but that they're persistent. They don't seem to obey that.
Well, you can do a little more than that too, and I don't know how creative you are in your workshop, but you can assemble a mesh screen around the bird feeder, and there are some commercially available ones. If you go to Wild Birds Unlimited, you can probably see them in there where they have a screen that only the little guys can get through and the big guys can't reach. And it also keeps the squirrels away, too, so it has a multifunctional benefit.
And what was that website, Rich?
Wild Birds Unlimited.
It's a shop.
It's a shop. Or any of your garden or feed stores in the neighborhood will have something of that sort. Or you can create one out of hardware cloth in your workshop.
Okay, very good.
Bill, thanks a lot.
Yes,
sir. We go over to Susan in Ulster Park. Susan, you're on Vox Pop with Rich Guthrie.
Hi. I have, for the first time, started feeding hummingbirds, and they were coming regularly. And then we had a lot of yellow jackets. So we got a little unit that, they go in and they disappear, they die, and so we got rid of the yellow jackets.
Do I hear the guinea hens in the background there?
No, they're just chickens. I wish they were guinea hens.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and so now the hummingbirds won't come back. We've gotten, the problem with the yellow jackets. They were at the feeders, too, and they were very aggressive, and they seemed to be fighting for the sugar water. But now the hummingbirds won't come back.
Well, they're gone.
They're gone?
Yeah, they're out of town now. They picked up their luggage, and they're on their way to Mexico or Yucatan, Florida. Well, they go beyond Florida. Amazing migration, incidentally. And and while you mention it, the those who do have hummingbird feeders, and, you might consider this yourself, is leave them up right into November. Because there are a few that still may wander through. It was just a few years ago I was mentioning that. And the ones that come by are the rare ones. They could use that little energy boost on their way south.
So they'd be coming from the north as well?
Right, and northwest. Maybe the Pacific Coast or the Rocky Mountains of Canada, Alaska. The rufous hummingbird is a western type of hummingbird species, and they take a long way around to get to Mexico. Some of them. Very few of them. They're very rare, but it's increasingly so.
Interesting.
So keeping the hummingbird feeder up might entice one of these to come by. And if it does happen, if any hummingbird reports that from now on, I'm very interested in knowing about.
Okay, and your email?
My email address is Gaeltic. I'll spell it GAELTIC at capital, CAPITAL.net. And I'd be very interested to hear if anybody has a hummingbird still coming to their feeder, or if you leave it up and there's one in the middle of October, the end of October, I want to know about it.
Okay. If you can. Very good.
When do they come back in the spring?
In May. First
in
week
May.
Of May.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks,
Susan. Thank you.
So you seem very precise. In other words, you know that if the first week of May hits, they come. It's not the second week. It's not.
You betcha.
Really? Why?
The timing. Hey, they got to get up here. The flowers are blooming. They've got a very relatively short season that they have got to set up their territory, fight off other rivals, pairs, raise a family, and then get out of town. So they are very precise in their timing.
Well, what if the climate is different over a winter? In other words, what if it's a very warm winter? Will they
don't
be
matter.
There? Really?
A few of them that didn't make it to Mexico may survive. And this happens in some bird species. And those survivors actually may be the pioneers, the vanguards of a more hardy population. And we've seen this. It sounds a little outrageous or adventurous, but we've seen this with birds such as the Carolina wren. And for years, the Carolina wren were not in the area. But then a few of them managed to come up here, and then we'd get hit with a hard winter, and it would wipe them out. Every now and then, there'd be a survivor. And every now and then, we'd have that survivor set up the territory so his offspring were then a sturdier stock, let's say.
Yeah.
Now we have Carolina wrens. It's a lovely thing to listen to a Carolina wren singing in January.
Could you hum a few bars?
Well, we can. I'll tell you what they say. Like they sound like they say is tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle.
I don't know if I've heard that one.
With your little outdoor monitor on, baby room monitor,
right.
Something I like to advocate for the, especially now that the doors and windows are closed for the season, set that up and you'll hear, if you have in the right neighborhoods, you'll hear Carolina wren singing away. I've been listening to one this morning. What a way to start the day. It's a delightful sound.
1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a short break and then back with more of your calls coming up on Vox Pop.
Support for Vox Pop on WAMC comes from Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com. Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute, Utica, New York, exploring the influence of sacred relics and ancient artifacts on modern interpretations, mwpai.org. Berkshire Botanical Gardens, Stockbridge, presenting their 78th Annual Harvest Festival, October 6th and 7th. Entertainment, children's activities, regional artisans, and food, berkshirebotanical.org. Dr. Joe Hanning, Capital District in New York City, specializing in occupational and environmental health and prevention, including back disorders, water contamination, new technology, and mold problems. JoeHanningMD.com and the Honest Weight Food Co-op, Albany. Organic produce, natural groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop.
Monday at 6 a.m., the fun drive begins. I hope you're there with us for all the fun and all the seriousness and the serious job at hand, which is keeping the station alive. And if you want to make your pledge early, we certainly love that. We encourage you to do it. WAMC.org is the website. WAMC.org. You can make a secure online pledge. We feed the lockbox, and then we open it up at the very beginning of the drive. Everything counts on day one. So it's WAMC.org. Our guest is Rich Guthrie. We talked birds today. Rich, you have a couple of announcements.
Sure. I'd like to, we have the benefit of the Hudson River in the capital region, and this October 14th, a group of good organizations, the New Baltimore Conservancy, the Enesquitar Creek Watershed Association, and the Queimans Historical Society are teaming together. The three organizations are putting together a cruise down the Hudson River, mainly looking at eagles and fall colors, October 14th. From at 4:30 p.m., a nice evening, late afternoon, evening cruise. And reservations are strongly recommended. If you want to come on board, I'll be narrating the eagle stories and more about the river. It's newbaltimoreconservancy.org.
Okay.
All one word, newbaltimoreconservancy.org. And there you can get your tickets to come on board.
Okay.
And then a couple other ones. I like to promote some of the activities, especially those things that kids are welcome to attend.
Sure.
And the John Burroughs Natural History Society down in Kingston, New York, will be doing a Falling Waters Nature Walk. Kids are welcome. That's at jbnhs.org. Go to field trips. That'll be on October 6th, right in the evening.
Hmm.
And then the evening at Beaver Ponds by the Mass Audubon Society over there in Lenox, Massachusetts, Monday, October 8th at 6 p.m. at their Pleasant Valley Sanctuary. And then another one is in Dutchess County, New York.
Yeah.
A bird walk at Montgomery Place by the Waterman Bird Club. WatermanBirdClub.org, October 3rd. Go to their website and you'll find out when and where to meet.
Will you be at all these events?
I will not. I'd love to be at all of them, but I.
You'll be on the Eagle Cruise.
I'll definitely be on that Eagle Cruise, right up there on the bow of the ship, pointing out eagles left, right, and right in front of us.
Do you wear a sailor's hat for that?
I will.
Okay, that would be great.
I have my little Dutch, my little cap. Yes.
What about an eye patch?
There you go.
Let's go back to the phone. Shelly in Weston. Shelly, you're on. Hello, Shelly. Oh, well, let me press the button. I'm sorry. Now, Shelly. Hello, Shelly, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Hello.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
I was just calling to ask you, we keep getting these little birds that want to get into our porch and nest. I'm thinking of some sort of a wren.
Okay.
They're tiny and they have very sharp beaks.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be something that would do, that bird that would do that? Or?
Yes. Let me see. There's a couple of birds that will do that. They may be interested in nesting, or they may be just interested in eating spiders. I have the wrens creeping around on my porch through the grape arbor, and they're looking for spiders' eggs. Those clever spiders, the light is on in the house, and the insects are drawn to the light. The spiders build a web. They catch a few, and then they wrap them up and save them for later. Well, then in the morning, the wrens come around and help themselves. They raid the refrigerator.
Ah.
So I love it. And very they sing smart. To me to give me a little boost.
Oh, that's nice.
Very smart. Well, thank you very much. I just wanted to tell you, we do see eagles over here. I've never seen one in the wild, but I've seen one over here in Ulster County.
Super.
Yes, it's great. Thank you.
Yep. Shelley, thanks a lot. How many different species or varieties of eagles are you liable to see on a cruise like that?
Well, the bald eagle is the star of the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've made a remarkable... This is one of the happy-to-tell-about stories of recovery from a disastrous man-made situation. So
the dioxin, specifically, right?
The hardcore chemicals, that's right. The pesticides. And so now they're back, and we love to see them. And we could almost guarantee, you can never, you know, fully right. guarantee it, but it's like the whale watches, you know. You go off the Massachusetts coast to see the whales, and they say, well, guarantee you're going to see some whales, or, well, then we won't.
Well, that's it.
But
that's
usually the ones I go on. We will see eagles, and if not, here's an opportunity to get together with like-minded people. You know what? Three diverse groups, a historical society, watershed association, and a conservancy, and then all bird brains, you know, all people like all the things about the outdoors. What an opportunity. October 14th.
All right. Very nice. Susan in Schenectady. Susan, you're on. Hello? Am I hitting
button? Yeah, you got the button there?
I swear I hit the button. Susan, are you there? No. Oh, no. This is Mike. Okay. Mike, and Mike, are you on?
Yes, I am.
That's
hi
you.
There, Mike.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay, good afternoon.
Right.
I heard about the Carolina Red.
Yeah.
And we have a bunch of future household sparrows that come through daily. And I seen one sparrow that had pink and kind of like a little crown, maybe. And it looked odd. It was almost like it was crossbreed with a... cardinal.
Okay.
I wonder if you know about this.
Well, my guess is that it's going to be the house finch, which looks like a sparrow. It's got, you know, it's got streaking here and there on it. It's mainly brown, but it does have that pink wash on the head and on the breast. And
what would a Carolina Red look like?
Oh, a Carolina Red is a sort of like an orangey cream color bird, a light rufous brown color. Brown bird with a long, decurved, sharp-pointed beak and a long tail that it often holds, flags around.
Because we did hear, my wife and I, we both heard it out the window a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. that same call that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle.
Hey, good job.
But we couldn't place where the bird was. It never came down to the feeder.
Yeah, he wouldn't
so
come to a feeder.
That's why I was curious if this bird that I saw with this... I'm aware of what the house finches look like. And
okay.
It was a fatter bird, you know, so obviously it's not the Carolina Red.
Right, yeah.
But it's just, they won't crossbreed in that way.
No,
they?
Not at all. No, not
no,
likely.
I didn't think so.
So, the other possibility is purple finch, that both of those would come to a bird feeder. And in Columbia County, the purple finches are coming down from the north, and the house finch... as the name suggests, do like to be around houses.
Okay.
I'm suspecting that that's where what you got there. But if not, you know, take a picture. Send me a picture. I'll be
great
glad
idea.
To work it through.
I would love to do that. But I'll tell you, where I am on the base of Greylock in Adams.
Yes.
I have a variety of birds that it's unbelievable. But my big fight is the squirrels and the raccoons.
Yep. Mm. I'm with you there.
And I won't buy a bird feeder now without the water mesh around it.
There you go. So that works for you.
Yes, because the raccoons will just rip it up.
Yep. Well, be watchful for the bears. You know that.
Yes.
Yeah, we had one in a backyard in downtown, too, not so long ago.
Wow.
Well, thanks for your time.
Yes,
okay,
Mike,
thanks. Thank
and,
you.
We hope we hear from you during the fun drive. Miriam in Columbia County is up. No, it's not Miriam?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we're having some confusion here. I'm
a little
sorry.
Fun is
it's
what
okay. I apologize, yeah. Miriam. You're on.
Go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, I've had some what I think are house wrens, not Carolina wrens, but I can't be sure. They're very close. They look very closely similar.
Yep.
I was wondering how to help them if they overwinter, since they're not staying in the house that I provided for them anymore. They had two broods out of it. Is there something I can do, some kind of habitat I could build for them or something to help them over winter?
Well,
I have chickadees, nuthatches. I had tons of hummingbirds. Just everything you can imagine.
Well, funny you should mention that, because just today I set up my worm habitat in the house.
What?
Yes. I got a batch of mealworms. I did this some years ago, and I let it go for a few years. Now I got ordered from an outfit in Ohio.
All right.
Mealworms. And those little guys love those mealworms. These are live critters that you can put out there.
How do you give it to them? I mean, do you just...
I put it out there.
I imagine they're alive, right?
They're alive, and I put it out there in a tray. And after a very short period of time, they learn to look for me, because I'm going to have a handful of worms for them, the mealworms. Yeah, I know. It's kind of the fun. I do this to the crows, too. I feed the crows when they come in from a long distance when they see me come out the door.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I whistle when I fill my feeder, and they come.
Yeah, sure. They're smart. They know what the story is. So the other thing is that let the wrens go. You know, if they're gonna, the house wrens, they're gonna migrate out of town. The Carolina wrens will stick around. They also like suet. So if you could put a suet feeder up, that will keep them going.
Okay.
And aside from that, bird seed doesn't really work for them. So,
now, you said something about Niger seed being like a good all-around thing for the smaller birds. Is it like a mouse helper kind of deal? Cause
A what?
Do like little rodents like Niger seed?
Okay. Do they?
Probably, you know, but not as much as they do the sunflower seed. I've had containers where the mice have gotten into the sunflower seed, and I don't have any evidence of them breeding the Niger seed, the thistle seed.
Okay.
So I think they don't like it.
Okay.
I think maybe it's just too much work for them.
Yeah, well, maybe it's just the brand you use.
Good. I'll keep using it.
All right, Miriam, thanks a lot and good luck. Let's go over to Kevin in Fonda. I think we have this straightened out now. It's Kevin, right?
Yes.
All right, you're on.
Hi. I was camping with a friend this spring, and on the way to the campsite, the trail to the campsite, we spooked a mother ruffled grouse, and there were like 8 or 10 eggs in the nest, and we tried to stay away from it in hopes she would come back, but she never came back. The next morning we went over, and all the eggs had been dispersed like within about a 3-foot radius around the nest. And my question is, my friend said, well, he thought the mother had done that, and I said, no, I think it was probably mice or skunks or a possum or something. What was it?
Probably a predator of that. You're more likely right. The female would not scatter the eggs. She would go back and incubate them as before. So, yeah, okay. Something got into them and messed them up.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yep. Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. One open line at the moment. Rich Guthrie is our guest. And over to, now we'll try this. Is it Susan in Schenectady?
Yes, it is.
Well, you're on.
I thought you overlooked me.
No, we wouldn't do
We've
that.
We've got it all worked out now. You're up.
Well, I'm calling because, you know, this summer I have quite a mourning dove population. And then I had these mourning doves that were nesting on my windowsill next to the air conditioning unit of my bedroom window. And I thought, how cute, you know? And I looked up one day about a month ago, and there were the two baby birds.
Ugly little things, aren't they?
I thought they were cute.
Okay,
you know?
All right.
I like mourning doves.
Okay.
But I did want to warn people about that situation, as I found out. After those baby birds left the nest, I was infested and my home was infested with bird mites.
Really?
Yes. And no one I have spoken to about this has any familiarity with it. I never had any idea that this could happen, and it's potentially, you know, very, very serious. They do crawl on you.
Yeah. Now, what are bird mites?
Oh, they're little parasites. They're what would you call them? They're
arachnids.
Little.
Really?
They are a mite. Well, the thing about them is that I wouldn't think that they would last long, because they're very particular about their host, and being as you're not a bird, You know, they may come, but they'll go in short order. So it's not something that will persist.
Yeah, that's terrible, though.
Well, I mean, it's...
Believe me, I didn't sleep in my bedroom for 2 weeks.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about it that much. Did they persist that long? Were they there 2 weeks after the birds left?
Well, no, I got on it right away and got the pest company and like that. But according to many sites online, it can become a very serious problem, and you may never get rid of them.
I don't buy that because, my experience with them is, and I've dealt with them before, because when you're cleaning out nest boxes like bluebirds or if you have barn swallow nests, and I do bird banding where I keep track of the comings and goings of birds. Mm-hmm. I run into that every now and then, and it's not the sort of thing that I worry about because I know that they're not interested in me at all. And so they would up and go in pretty short order once they found out that I'm not a bird.
Yeah.
So...
I hope so. Well, I got rid of them, but I just thought I would warn people in case that's not true.
Well, I agree.
It's good enough for me.
Right.
You would not want them crawling. They travel by the thousands, if not hundreds.
Yikes!
Of they're infinitesimally.
Yeah,
tiny.
They are. But again, creepy little things, and I'm with you on that. But
well, that's appalling.
Yeah, that's my public service announcement.
Thank you, Susan.
Thanks for hanging in there for us.
All right. Well, that is really, really disquieting. We go to Rebecca in. Where are you calling from?
It's over near the Great Sacandaga Lake.
Ah, Mayfield.
Sure, I know Mayfield.
It says Mashield, so I know it's Mayfield. All right, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
Kind of strange, weird two-part question, I guess. I moved up from Connecticut. There are way more birds here than in Connecticut, so I started doing a lot of bird watching. And I saw we've got, like, two different types of heron. We've got hawks, and then this really cool bird, an American bittern or something like that.
Bittern, yes.
Kind of looks like a tiny heron thing, but with stripes on it.
Yeah,
nice.
And hard to see, but
and
a little difficult to hear. Have you heard them calling?
It was obnoxious.
Obnoxious.
he was like freaked out. It was the alarm call or something like that. So it was like, you know, like really, really, really loud. But yeah, I mean, there's just a ton of amazing birds. But then this year they put a rotary in Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really surprised to see that the state was spraying stuff like right into all the swamps where these birds are nesting. So I didn't know if any of the groups that you were associated with kind of like petitioned for them not to do those things.
Why would they spray anything after having put a rotary in? What was the connection?
Well, basically they put in this giant rotary and the location where these birds are nesting is, you know, kind of like there's a lot of rivers in that area around the Sacandaga, and the rivers run along the side of the road. So basically when they tore up the road, put in the rotary, they did that stupid grass planting green foam stuff.
Right.
But they literally did it all the way down into the water. So, I don't know. It just seems kind of silly to me. I mean, all you're doing is growing grass next to a swamp anyway. And there were, like, tons of nesting birds in there. So I just didn't know, you know, if any of the Audubon societies kind of, like, you know, spoke to the government about that. Or there's somebody I could write to. Or I don't know.
Well, the regional office of the Department of Transportation, there's an environmental agency in the DOT hierarchy. And if you know, you'd have to do a little searching, and I'm sure you could come up with the environmental component of the Department of Transportation, and get from them the answer to what the heck it is that they're doing up there.
Yeah,
I can't see the connection, but the bittern, that's one of my favorite sounds out there, and here's my little sound of the bittern.
Sit down, children. Here he goes.
No, the bittern is hard to see because they are magnificently camouflaged to blend in with the cattails and reeds of the marshes. But you can hear them just before dawn, and they don't have a horrible screechy sound. They have this wonderful little orchestra. It goes something like...
Here we go.
Yeah, they go on and on. They just call. That's a love song to each other. And you can get them to answer if you could come up with a reasonable. And mine is only reasonable. It ain't. They're good at it.
Yeah.
But
well,
try it sometime. You'll be happy
to
talk to the bitterns. Yeah, work on that.
Well, Rebecca, thanks for eliciting that sound. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Have a good one. All right, let's go. Let's get one more call in before the break. Joe in Rosendale. Joe, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys?
Okay.
I just want to relate something I saw the other day, and then I have a question to follow that up. But
sure.
I'm coming around a bend in the road, right? So all of a sudden I see in front of me a hawk on the road lifting up a possum, like a dead possum, whether he killed it or not, I don't know. But possum is pretty big, you know, and he gets like about 2 feet up off the ground, and then he has to plop down again.
Yeah.
And then he kind of jumps up again, and he gets it into the bush and you know, on the side of the road, so it kind of disappears.
Sure.
Just saying, wow, that's kind of crazy. But my question would be then, do hawks take cats? I have an outside cat, you know, and I see hawks circling around up above, and you know, that's my question.
Not likely.
Yeah.
Not likely. However, there are some other problems that you may have for your cat. Being outdoors like that, there are some critters that will go after it. You know, we have an increasing number of coyotes out there that will be happy to run off with your cat.
But not avian creatures, right?
No. Not really, not really. You know, a healthy backyard cat is a lot too big for a hawk to tackle.
Oh, when I see a possum, you know, possum is probably heavier than a cat.
Yeah. It may be, but the thing is that the possum was probably hit by a car.
Yeah.
And was wounded or killed and made it an easy target.
See, I was thinking that the hawk only got live prey and the vulture's got the carrion.
But no, not true.
Yeah,
Hawks will help themselves to roadkill if they can.
Right.
In fact, if you look at my blog at thetimesunion.com, and you'll see my little story about how hawks get in trouble. And it's just about that business of picking up roadkill off the highway.
All right.
All right.
Sounds good. Thanks. Good show.
Yep. Thanks a lot. We're going to take a break here, and then we'll be back with more. Rich Guthrie is the guy. 800-348-2551. One open line. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from the Old Stone Fort Museum, site of the Stone Fort History Fair, Saturday and Sunday of Columbus Day weekend. Reenactors, demonstrations, and more. TheOldStoneFort.org. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs. Massage for couples and individuals. EastHeaven.com for reservations. Storm King Art Center, a 500-acre sculpture park in the heart of the Hudson Valley, open Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. StormKing.org for details. River Valley Market, Northampton, Massachusetts, open 8 to 9 daily, specializing in locally grown foods including fresh meat, produce, cheese, and dairy. RiverValleyMarket.coop. And the Hudson Valley Heart Center, providing cardiovascular care throughout the Hudson Valley, with services including nuclear, echo, CT angio, and vascular testing to help evaluate cardiovascular wellness. HVHeartCenter.com.
1-800-348-2551, the telephone number. We hit the home stretch now with Rich Guthrie. Rich, we had somebody who wanted to call in and said, can you restate the Eagle trip in October? So in other words, just give us the
quick rundown.
Yeah.
Yes, we're doing a cruise on the Hudson River. It's a benefit for three environmentally sensitive organizations. It'll be at leaving on October 14th at 4:30 p.m. We'd like to see you there about 4 o'clock.
Okay.
From Shady Harbor Marina in Queens, New York. And for reservations, and get them quick because we will fill the boat. NewBaltimoreConservancy.org.
All right.
NewBaltimoreConservancy.org.
And you had some pine bush activity.
I did. We were just talking about bird banding. And
yeah.
I do want to draw attention to the fact that the Albany pine bush will be having a bird banding demonstration coming up on, where did I put that note here? There we go. October 5th, that's Friday, October 5th at 8 a.m. And you can go to their website. AlbanyPineBush.org.
Okay, and what is bird banding, real quick?
Oh, that's where the scientists, I've been doing this for years myself, where you capture a bird, put a tag on its leg so you can track its movements, coming and going, returns, and it's the route that it takes. It's a very good opportunity to see birds up close and also learn about the science of bird migration.
Very interesting. Let's go to Jay in Worthington. Jay, you're on with Rich Guthrie.
Hi, Rich. A couple of things. I was driving through Chesterfield the other day, and looked up and saw what I thought was an osprey, and I slowed down and pulled off and watched it for a while, and it wasn't an osprey, it was a falcon of some sort. And I got home that night and pulled out my Petersons, and what struck me was the description of the jar falcon described it as flying sort of gull-like. So I think I saw a white-faced jar falcon.
What?
And, well, what you're talking about is a bird that is very, very rare in this area. And
exactly.
When it occurs really only in the wintertime. These birds nest up in Greenland and Labrador and across.
I'm not a birder, but it was pretty striking the way it looked. So
I can understand.
Is there any reasonable facsimile that might be more likely?
Yeah. Let me just suggest that some of our other birds will take on that pointy wing appearance when they're in a hunting-type dive. And the goshawk, the northern goshawk, will appear to be white like that and can take on, although its wings are normally rounded, when they're into a hunting dive, they can get into a pointy wing-type configuration.
Okay, this was floating over the road, it would be very unusual.
Let me
mention a couple other things since I never call into your show. You mentioned once birds playing, and we have a large barn that has a lot of barn swallows, and I have geese. And this summer, they would pick up goose down and play catch with it.
Yes.
They'd fly back and forth, and one would carry it for a while, then drop it. It would float down. Another would grab it. It would float down. Another would grab it. And then one other sighting I had, this was a couple years ago, driving with my son up Plainfield Road. I saw a luna moth come across the road and pulled around it and stopped and was backing up looking in my rearview mirror, and a cooper's hawk came out of the woods, grabbed the luna moth, and disappeared on the other side of the road.
Now, that's remarkable. And you caught this through your rearview mirror, huh?
Yes, I was looking in my rearview mirror.
Excellent.
So that was
the luna moth, by the way, is a beautiful, beautiful insect. It's the most gorgeous green that's out there.
Yep.
They have these long, graceful streamers that follow behind.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
yep.
their numbers have declined, I think probably because of night lighting.
Mm.
We have a friend who's got a sodium vapor light.
Yes.
She had them all over the side of her barn, and I was sort of dismayed to see that.
Yeah, I agree. It takes them away from what they should be doing, that's making more luna moths.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. Very interesting.
You bet. Thank you. Great show.
Thank you very much.
Let's go over to John in Catskill. John.
Hey, hi.
Hi.
We've had, when we built our house here in Catskill, we immediately had some phoebes that moved in under the deck, that sort of high up deck. And they built their nest. They had two babies in the spring. They went away. They came back to the nest. They had two babies in the fall, and they went away. It was just predictable. The nest went down. The next year, they came back and built a nest in exactly the same place. And again, two babies and two babies. Well, this year, they built a nest in a different place. It was smaller, and instead of two babies, they had five babies.
Yay!
And it was just too many. You know, they were falling, and they ended up all falling out of the nest and dying.
Oh, not good.
Not good.
No, not good. So I was wondering if this happens again, we could crawl up to the nest and look and see how many eggs are in there and take out a few.
Well, here's the thing. Are you sure they were all phoebes that hatched? And the reason I say that is because phoebes will oftentimes fall victim to the parasite bird, the cowbird. And if a cowbird gets to put an egg in a nest, the young cowbird will toss out the young of the phoebe.
Because I could see all the babies, and they were all identical. You know, this wonderful, fluffy, you know, stuff with one little tiny beak coming out of it. They're really cute.
Yeah, they are. And it's a shame that they didn't make it.
Phoebes
have to learn. And they try to overproduce the capacity of either the nest, which I'm really surprised that a phoebe would not build a nest substantial enough for the number of eggs that they're going to lay. So I think there was another factor involved in there.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting.
Yeah, because where they built it, there was just not much room. You know, they built it on top of a pole, basically, and it was, you know, set up against the wall.
Yeah, I understand. You would think they would have it right before they started.
What I wondered is if we did take out eggs, would they still come back to the nest?
But you're not allowed to do that. You know, you can't help them out by raiding their nest. That's not allowed.
Oh. Oh, really?
Federal law.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, it's a bird protection law, and, you know, it's in the books, and it's there for a reason, and not for the beneficial or the good motives that you have. It's there to prevent bad motivations.
Okay.
And I just can't see that that will happen again. I find what you're saying is something very odd. And even with that, I think there was another factor involved. Maybe something else got into the nest and wrecked the young.
All right. Well, John, thanks very much for the call. So cowbirds, they have enough wherewithal to go and find a nest.
Yeah.
And then they're too lazy to build their own nest, but they're ambitious enough to kick out all the other eggs and take over.
A lot of characterizations in there. And I regard it as much as we don't like the idea of cowbirds taking over the nest of one of our favorite little birds, like a warbler or a wren, or they got it down fun. You know, they get to lay the egg and go out and party some more. So leave the raising up to somebody else. And
it's very irresponsible.
Very well, no, but they, what a trick! But what I mentioned, you know, if I may, Ray, I just heard one of the underwriters was Storm King Art. The Mearns Bird Club, what a coincidence, is having a field trip to the Storm King Art Center.
Wow!
On October 6th at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's free admission if you go on this bird walk around the Storm King Art Center grounds with a bunch of bird watches from the Mearns Bird Club. And I recommend, if you're interested, go to see their site, mearnsbirdclub.org.
Mr. Guthrie, you are a font of knowledge today.
It's all fun out there, and I bring the kids because it's a great opportunity for kids to learn.
All right, let's go to Sophia in Rhinebeck. Sophia, you're on.
Hi. I just moved into a house and was looking out my window and noticed a male and female cardinal. But I also noticed there's many squirrels that are around getting ready for the winter. And I'm wondering, what could I put out for the cardinals? And also, what type of feeder could I use where the squirrels aren't going to come and steal it?
Okay.
Well, there are a couple of possibilities there. Again, there's that one feeder that has the weighted entrance. If a bird perches on it, they can get at the bird seed. But if something bigger than a bird or a larger bird, for example, goes up to it, the weight draws down the door and shuts the bird feeder down. So the squirrels, you know, they may get up there, get one sunflower seed, and the door, then that's it. The door is closed and they'll have to leave. Of course, squirrels are very clever, and it's almost as much fun. It's worth the price of admission just to watch how they work around that whole setup. But that's one possibility. And the other one is one of those bird feeders with the mesh around it that would work for the smaller birds. And I'm not quite sure that cardinals will be able to get at the bird seed with that kind of feeder. So I recommend checking out one of these trap door, weighted door bird feeders. You can go to places like Five Rivers Environmental Education Center in Albany or some of the other natural history areas where they do have bird feeders set up, and you can see these in operation. You can see how well they work and the antics of squirrels trying to get around the system.
And what would I feed them?
Oh, sunflower seed.
Okay.
They will love you forever if you put out a black oil sunflower seed for the cardinals, and you know, that works for them and a lot of our other good birds.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sophia.
Sure,
Christy, our phone screener, put a picture up with a feeder at the top and the shield.
Right, yeah.
And then the pole.
And that's a baffle. You can put a baffle on the pole to keep the squirrels from getting up there.
I've been baffled by Christy for quite some time.
And I want to tell you that the squirrels will drive you nuts trying to, as they go through there, and they'll defeat system after. So there's a wonderful YouTube website out there that a video of some guy in England, you know, some idiot in England introduced our gray squirrels over to there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's payback time, you know, for all the stuff that we brought from them.
Yeah.
But in any event, the squirrels over in England have gone wild. There's another lesson in don't introduce exotics.
Oh.
And the squirrels over there, of course, they're raiding the bird feeding tables that they have. And this one guy set up this whole elaborate system to keep the squirrels away from his feeder.
Yeah.
The squirrels won. They won.
They win a lot.
And watching the squirrels get from point A to point B, being the feeder, is in itself just hilarious. It became a real feat.
Let's go to Jan in Kingston. Jan, you're on with Rich Guthrie. Jan. Hello, Jan.
Jan, are you there?
No. Is anybody there?
Hello, Kingston.
Okay. Oh, I just hit the button and then we heard Jan.
Was that Jan?
She was saying hello as I was pressing off.
Where was she? Jan.
She was asleep at the switch. I'm sorry, Jan. Let's go over to Jake in Goshen. Jake.
Hey.
Hey.
I hear a bird in my backyard. I'm guessing it's a bird.
Okay.
But I haven't seen it, but I'm going to give you an imitation of what I heard.
Oh, I love this.
Okay, Jake.
It's almost like a wood block. It's like a... And then you hear it maybe another 20 or 30 seconds later. It's like a cluck.
Ah.
I was wondering if you could identify that bird.
I'm working on it. And maybe it's not a bird. And we just had this the last time I was on, and somebody came up with a brilliant suggestion that it may be a chipmunk.
Ah.
How's that sound? They go something like that. And then the thing about chipmunks is that they're very persistent. And I often, oftentimes fooled by the sound of a chipmunk.
Mm-hmm.
And then, they just, the trick is that they just keep it up. A bird will dummy up after a short while. Mm-hmm. A chipmunk just does not know enough to stop.
Mm.
Yeah, they'll squeak. I know my dog chases them.
Yeah, they'll do that. But they also have this, where they get their name, chipmunk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, Jake, thank you very much. It's Dennis's turn. Dennis, you're up.
Hi, good afternoon, fellas.
Hi there.
I know you're primarily a wild bird expert, but we have 4 parrots in our house.
Okay.
Senegal parrots, an African gray, and a yellow-naped Amazon. My question is, because it's around the time where we have to clip their wings again for obvious safety reasons when we have them out. We don't want them flying around and, flying into walls and things like that.
Or flying away.
Correct, yeah, or flying out of the house or anything. My question is, have you came across anything in your profession that is safe and won't harm the birds, but is, like, noxious to them that might, incapacitate them, just put them to sleep for a little while
so
we can safely clip the birds' wings?
No.
You've never came across anything like that?
No, I don't. There is, have you considered, can't you just hold the bird in a docile position? Upside down. Well, parrots spend half their life upside down, so that won't work. I know when we're dealing with some of the other birds, holding them baby cradle style, that you can get at the legs or the wing, depending on the bird species and how much harm you might experience if you should fail, like from a flailing talon or the like.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like fun.
Well, I mean, the only reason I was really concerned about it, the 2 birds that my family owns are pretty docile, but my grandfather's bird is, he prefers to be by him and with him, so he's awfully nervous when any other people come by.
Sure.
So just with the bird's safety, if by accident when we were holding him, he happened to, flip out and start flying away because he's very timid towards other people, I was just wondering, maybe I'll have to do some research online to see if there's any kind of a medicine that I can give them.
Oh, I wouldn't
recommend
that.
I didn't want it to be toxic to the birds, and I want it to be as safe a process as possible.
Yeah, I understand your concern, and a couple of things. Number one, I don't think that's an area where an inexperienced amateur, and I that's not a disparaging comment, but that would require... probably requires a veterinarian license to either obtain a material and to apply it. So I wouldn't go there if I were you.
So the best bet would be to take it to a vet.
Maybe some herbal tea.
Go online and see. There are plenty of parrot fancy organizations out there, and I'm sure you're not the first person to come up with this issue. So I would give it a try.
Listen, we're going to let you go,
thanks,
Dennis.
Thanks very much.
Yep, thanks a lot. I'll tell you what, Jan called back. Jan, we only have about 20 seconds, so I'm sorry, but go right ahead.
Jan
is batting. I'll try this. Jan, are you there? Hello, Jan.
No Jan.
Yeah, okay, listen. Good luck to all, and sorry that you didn't make it through. I apologize thrice to Jan. And Rich Guthrie, fabulous job, my friend. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890, with 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Dam Cafe and Deli, Saugerties, New York, serving breakfast and lunch with chef-created soups, salads, vegetarian options, and homemade desserts. Catering services available. The Dam Cafe and Deli.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com, and Esopus Chamber Orchestra, Stone Ridge, New York, presenting Natalie Merchant at SUNY Ulster's Quimby Theater October 20th, sponsored by Marbletown Hardware, EsopusChamberOrchestra.com. That's it for the last Vox Pop before the fun drive. We hope you are all with us on Monday morning at 6 a.m. You can make your pledge now online at WAMC.org. It'll all count on day one, on minute one. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Christy Carton answered the phones. Patrick Dungis, our producer. The great Rich Guthrie will be back with us some point after the drive. Moyers and Company tomorrow on Monday. It's the WAMC Fun Drive. Stay tuned now for a news update.